All right, guess who's back? It's Like Folio in the house.
Feels good to be back.
I am Andy Swan.
Hello, I'm Landon Swan.
Yeah, there's Landon. We're the founders of Like Folio. It's been a while since we've done a podcast. And it's been about a year, actually. We were doing them very consistently for a long time, but then it got really distracting. And the last year or so, we've just really done, we just put our head down and really kind of perfected our product. And I think we're there now, and it's time to shout it from the rooftops.
Absolutely. Made a lot of strides in the last year.
Yeah, I mean, we've got, we've now got, you know, quantitative funds with billions of dollars under management signing with us and paying us for data after a very extensive process in terms of analyzing our data. And so that's a big accomplishment, but it required our head being down for a little while and getting everything right. We've created a cool product for individual investors as well, probably the best product in finance, if I'm going to pat ourselves on the back a little bit. But we're really proud of it. We're glad to be back. So let's hop right in. Earnings season is underway. This last week. So this is Friday that we're recording this. Good Friday, April 19th. And this past week was week one of the Like Folio Sunday earnings sheets. And we got started. When we got started, Lane, we were pretty clear with everybody. You know, this is kind of a weak week. We didn't have any top plays. We really said, you know, this is dipping our toes in the water. And, you know, overall, it turned out that was probably pretty good advice.
Right. Well, it's, you know, it's week one out of 10. And, you know, we bold the really good plays on our sheet, and there were none bolded. I think there was maybe 5 or 6 trades total, and they were mostly half position-ish. I think all but one were bearish. And they didn't do well, but I think, you know, as far as my account goes, I always like to talk about my account. It didn't get killed because, you know, one of the things we talked about was if you're heavily weighted towards one side, you got to move your positions down a little bit. So the market can't kill you overall. So, and I've got duration. So I think I'll be fine from that week one, taking a couple losses, but no bulls. So I didn't go heavy on anything. So no big deal.
Yeah, no, I think, the key there, I mean, what was it, 5 out of the 6 or something like that were bearish.
That's what it was.
And, you know, the market was up this week, which hurt. And then, you know, we've got duration and some of them, you know, I really still like. I still like the position. The reaction to all of these was fairly muted. I mean, the best position you could have been in this week was selling premium. You had Netflix essentially flat after earnings. You know, you had Bank of America, what was it, up 3 cents the day after earnings? I mean, yeah, everything was so muted in terms of a reaction that, you know, that's the way you want it to be when you're, you know, when things are going against you. And so you have, if you have duration, then it doesn't really take much for you to get into profitable territory. So I love that. Moving on to week two, which is starting to get a little more exciting. It's actually, you know, week three is where things just really go crazy.
Right. Three through like 7 or 8 is where the meat is. That's where it's really cool. You got tons of companies. Sometimes you've got 30 or 40 on the sheet and 4 or 5 bold plays. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two's getting warmer.
Yeah. Week two's getting warmer though. We've got, I'm excited about Facebook because we've really done a good job on that company in terms of some of the longer term calls that we've made, especially as, you know, crisis type of events come out. And so I think Facebook's always like one of those that I think of it from the perspective of, I want to be ready to react to whatever the reaction is on the earnings trade. So I always think about that on Facebook. We've also got Starbucks, which, you know, the consumer data around Starbucks is always very interesting. There's always a lot of, it seems like it's kind of, it's weirdly controversial for a coffee company.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and then I'm excited about Hasbro as well, which I went on TD Ameritrade Network earlier this week and talked about Hasbro. And just the headwinds that they face are very significant because, you know, if you think about it, when you and I were kids, we're brothers. When you and I were kids, we'd get out our G.I. Joes. We'd get out our, you know, He-Man and all this stuff. And we'd play and we'd pretend and we'd have all these games going on against each other and setting up battlefields and all this cool stuff with these, you know, these Hasbro and Mattel toys. That were plastic, and we begged that mom and dad take us to Toys R Us so we can buy something new. We need this plane or whatever.
What you wanted, whatever you saw, the whatever commercials were on Saturday morning cartoons, yeah. That's what you wanted to buy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I wanted, right? I wanted the aircraft carrier, the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier that was like 6 feet long. Phil Hill had that down the street. Oh, Phil Hill had that.
It was huge.
It was amazing to go play. Yeah. And then, you know, it started, Nintendo started coming, and then, you know, Sega's. And then now you look at kids, like my kids, it's like, what do I need a toy for? I just need your permission to download this new app. Like, that's it. They got an iPhone or an iPad. That's a huge headwind for Hasbro, I think.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that, you know, they have shown that they can get in that space. I mean, you know, they're a smart company. They're not idiots. They know that this is a headwind. It's just how fast can they react? So they've got to get more digital, and we'll see if that pays off.
Yeah, we'll see. Toys R Us closing really hurt them. They said that in their last quarterly call. What companies are you looking forward to in week two of the Sunday earnings sheet from Likefolio?
So I think Snapchat is a fun one. We've done really well. We kind of called the collapse of Snapchat, did really well on that long term. And then, you know, last quarter we actually had a very strong bullish signal on it. It was an oversold really signal that you and I kind of discussed, and I think we both passed on it, even though the system said to go in, and it would have been a really good trade. So we outsmarted ourselves on that one. But I'm interested to see how their data's held up since that rebound. Chipotle also I'm interested in, just seeing if, you know, they've been flying so high since the new CEO. And, you know, ever since he came in, our data's been disagreeing with the stock market. So I want to see if it continues to, or if purchase intent's picking up. I want to see if I can take some more out of the money puts shots at them. The other one other thing I do like about next week is we've got three airlines reporting. And sometimes that it may, haven't looked at the data yet, but it may give us a really good opportunity at a pair trade, which I love to do on airlines. So we'll see if I think it's American, Alaska, and Southwest. So hopefully two, one's bullish, one's bearish. We'll see.
Yeah, and in week one we got United Airlines, which came out and, you know, just had a, they had a decent quarter and the stock went up, and so the, it looked like Wall Street's reaction wanted to be positive. So that's something we can carry over into week two. We can just have that kind of in mind a little bit as we look at the data and you know, kind of create a bias for the airline trades going into the week.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to discuss yesterday, Pinterest went public. And, you know, I'm going to get a little off topic here and get outside of trading, because I think Pinterest is a really cool company. Is the ticker symbol PINS?
Yeah, PINS, P-I-N-S.
P-I-N-S, it's a good ticker. But they went public. They had a very successful public offering. I think it was up. They priced above the high end of the range, and then the market went up 25% from there on the first trades.
Yeah.
You know, so very good.
Opened at 19 and closed just under 25. So very strong first day.
Yeah. Wow. Very strong first day, because 19 was even above the range that they were trying to sell at. So that's awesome. You know, but I wanted to talk just real quickly from an entrepreneurial perspective. I think that there's a lot to learn from Pinterest for people, because I know a lot of people in this audience are small business owners, entrepreneurs, and things like that. I put this on Twitter under my personal account, but I said, you know, Pinterest is one of the least sexy of the 2019 kind of tech IPOs. But I really think we would all be wise to study it And I listed, you know, three reasons for this. And number one, Pinterest really went out and built a very strong, you know, what I would call very sticky community of users over a long period of time. So this isn't, you know, a company that's out there trying to do all this growth hacker stuff, you know, where it's like send notifications all the time, do this, do that, like constantly getting people's face. You know, the company seemed to be really more obsessed with creating a great product, which, you know, went to my point number two. You know, Pinterest has been user first in terms of its thinking all the way. And, it was kind of like, Land, don't you think like Pinterest, I remember when it first sprung up and first got on the radar, that was a while back. It's almost like people forgot about it. And then now it's IPOing in this incredibly positive way. They've been doing something right.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's a little bit off the radar for me just because it's so heavily skewed towards women.
Yep.
I think it's over 80% women. So that's a huge, skew there, obviously. So I think they've got I think part of their growth is probably going to be attracting men because they're doing so well with women. So we'll see if they can do that. That's massive. And so, you know, you and I don't often know a lot about Pinterest, but if we ask our wives, we'd probably have really strong opinions and a lot more information.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that it's great that the company focused on the making the product great for users over a long period of time. Like that was clearly their key focus. They weren't out in the news trying to be flashy all the time and the growth hacker stuff. And then, you know, third, I think is very important because they went public with a really solid business model and with good financials for, a company like this. And so number three for me was that they introduced user-friendly monetization, right? So they've been able to make their existing user base more and more valuable by creating monetization that enhanced monetization techniques, i.e. advertising and other things that actually enhanced the user experience, right? It didn't get in their way. It's not like some of these ads that it's just like, holy crap, this company must be trying to monetize me because now I'm just seeing all this crazy stuff that I never had any interest in. It's like they just made it part of the flow and they made users appreciate the ads that they saw. And I think, you know, another company that's like that right now is probably Roku. And, you know, I think that's super important is when a company can align its monetary interests with the interests of the user base and client base that it has. That's a great combination, and very few companies are able to pull that off.
Right. That's a great point. I mean, I remember did a post or something about a year ago with Yahoo, how I was at A and I wanted to get to B, and there was a page in between there that basically they put this ad in my face and like, you have to look at this for 15 seconds. And I was not interested at all. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is horrible experience. And then you've got other companies, like you're talking about Pinterest and others, that they know what you are interested in and maybe what you'd be willing to pay money for. So I've seen ads in other places where I'm like, oh, cool, that's interesting. I want to check that out. That adds to my experience and, of course, benefits the company.
Yeah, big time. I think that's a really important point. The way that they've developed an understanding of who each user is extremely, you know, is extremely compelling. And they've done a good job of that. And then lastly, I'll just say, you know, like Megan, who's in our office and you and I have talked about in here, like this is the year of the suburban woman. Like this is Peloton. This is Pinterest. This is, you know, martinis at lunch and yoga pants from Lululemon and the key demographic in the next presidential election. I mean, this is their year and Pinterest just falls right into that sweet spot.
The only thing I'm potentially concerned about is we've seen a lot over the last year or two of companies using an IPO as sort of an exit where they pump everything up right before the IPO. That's the high price for the next year. It's all selling from there. It's super early, obviously, but this doesn't have the feel of that, but it has happened a lot over the last year or two. So, you know, long term, I'd use a little caution on them.
Yeah, I agree, but it's not like Uber or Lyft or any of these others that have gone to a 50, 60, $100 billion valuation in the private markets before, you know, kind of running out of options. There's only so much, you know, people are going to pay. And with these preferred shares, when I look at Pinterest, I just see a company that built a really good business over time and decided to go public. So I think that there's less of a risk of that than there was with Snapchat or the Ubers and Lyfts and Fitbit of the world. So I want to close out every one of these with a trading tip, because I think that that's the most valuable thing we can provide to people, other than the data that we charge people for and the research that we charge people for is, you know, on these podcasts and videos is put together, the ability to learn and to educate and to share information that we've gained over the last, 20 years of trading or whatever. It's like hard to say. I still feel 20 years old. I don't know how I've been trading for 20 years, but, what I think, Landon, I'll let you expand on this, but the topic is, for the trading tip is just kind of seeing, I always carry the sheet with me, this earnings sheet, and I'm talking about earnings trading right now. And so just seeing the earnings sheet or the week ahead as a full kind of approach, right? It's a full thing that you're looking at. You're not just looking at one stock and then the next stock and then the next stock. You got to look at the full earnings sheet. And then also combining that with a understanding or awareness, I'd say, of where you're at and in the full earnings cycle, which it can be 10 weeks long. Can you talk about that? Because I know your account is, kind of like one of the best I've ever seen in terms of utilizing that knowledge and understanding of where you're at in each of these cycles.
Sure. So, it's 10 weeks long and we cover 300 companies. Of those, I would say that, we have the data suggests to trade maybe 25 or 30, depending on the week. I mean, we're talking about 1 out of 10 look really strong enough to play. Sometimes it could be more than that, but I'd say that's kind of normal. And if you're talking about, one of the things I like to do is give myself duration. So I don't like to do weeklies. I don't like to do something where I've got 2 days to be right, because a lot of times it can go against you and come back and you make money. And if it goes with you initially, you can make the decision to take profits off the table. And so I'm always doing vertical spreads. Sometimes I do singles, but I love to do vertical spreads because it maximizes how much I can lose on each trade. So I kind of think of it like bets, where I've got X amount of dollars I'm putting into this trade. If it goes completely against me, then fine, I lost that much money. But I don't really care. Once it goes 5% against me, it's the same as if it goes 20 or 30. I don't really care after that. It's just whether or not maybe it'll come back. If it goes 5% against me, maybe it'll come back over the next month. So what I do is I consider the fact that I'm getting in these trades over basically like 2.5 months. And I will often have a position from week 3 still in week 10 because I gave myself enough duration. Yep. And so you have to consider that. So if you think about the fact that we're getting into maybe 25 or 30 or maybe even 40, depending on the earnings season, I like to trade my account. I put in about 1/40th of my account, so 2.5% of my account as the max risk for each trade. Now, I would say that maybe 30% of trades go to max loss. Sometimes I'm getting out before that. Sometimes they come back and they're in the middle somewhere. I'd say that even a fewer percentage than that go to max gain, because I give myself usually like a 2-to-1 shot, where if it goes in my favor, I can take profits or half of the potential profit, which is what I risked because I had a 2-to-1 going into it. I know we're getting a little bit complicated into verticals, but basically know the fact that you have, if you give yourself duration, which is really smart, you're going to have trades from several weeks ago that are eating up your buying power. So if you do something like 10% of your buying power on these trades, you're going to run out of money real quick. And you're going to be in a position where you have to make a decision between taking duration off or entering this new opportunity. And yeah, plus you're going to be stressed out like crazy. Much.
So I think that's really key. And I think that the other thing that I just noticed just listening to you, and I hope, people that are listening noticed as well. And you're going to notice this over and over when you hear Landon and I talk about trading. The entire conversation was based around risk. right? The entire conversation was based around losers, right? So with Likefolio, we don't lose as much as we win, but we focus on what happens if we lose far more than we focus on what happens if we win. And that is so critical because dealing with winners is easy, right? Like just think about life, you know, like dealing with the good times is easy, right? It's making sure that the bad times don't kill you is like the number one key to the whole deal. And so I just encourage people to think about that, to think about risk from that perspective. And I also think that duration, what Landon's talking about when he talks about duration is, you know, the length of time that you're able to hold a trade. And that is by using options that expire a little later out and that give you the opportunity to make decisions and not force your hand. So you're essentially just giving future Landon some opportunities to make decisions rather than giving future Landon some scenarios where he's forced to make really, really difficult and bad decisions.
Yep, exactly. And just for reference, for, you know, I was about 2.5% per trade on max risk. I got to the point last earnings season where I had maybe at the very fewest, I had 2 or 3 bullets to fire. So I had, you know, 5% or 7.5% of my account balance available to trade. That's how many open positions I had. I had like 35 open positions at one time because I had so many that carry on for so long. I also do our opportunity alerts in addition to earnings, but that's a much smaller number. But just to kind of give you an idea, if you're trading like folio data, 2 to 2.5% should get you through the entire season.
Yeah, I think, and essentially you just think about it like, I have this much that's dedicated to earnings trading, right? And then you create your 1/40th of that, 1/50th, 1/20th, you know, whatever it is, it's going to make sense for you, but it's something, you know, you got to think about duration. You got to think about how picky you're going to be. And you got to think about making sure you're not forced to make a bad decision down the road.
And pick that number based on if you lose 5 in a row, you won't lose sleep over it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cause I mean, if you're talking about a 53 to 55% edge, losing 5 in a row is not unheard of. I mean, I've had 5 in a row winners before. Losing 5 in a row is definitely a possibility. So keep that in mind. Always plan for the downside and you'll be very calm and happy in your trading.
Yeah. I mean, most people are not. So that tells you right there that you probably should be. All right, cool. Well, this was awesome. Good to get back in the saddle of the podcast and video. Check us out, likefolio.com, and follow us on Twitter at likefolio and on YouTube. Just search for Likefolio and subscribe to the channel. And we're also in Spotify. We're in Spotify now, which is very cool. We're excited about that, as well as all of the podcast apps. So, enjoy your weekend. Happy Easter to everybody that celebrates that. And looking forward to getting back in the earnings week 2 on Monday.
See you guys.